abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It is Tuesday, February 18th, 2014, the 100th episode of The Tom Woods Show. We are the number one rated libertarian podcast on iTunes, thanks to you listeners. And to help us celebrate today, we're joined by Judge Andrew Napolitano. Before I get to the judge, a quick note. By next month, I'm going to have ready for you guys a free ebook of transcripts of all the exciting interviews we did in 2013, and I'm going to give that away to you guys for free. So make sure you subscribe to the program so you don't miss how to get that. You can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere else you like to get your podcasts, and you can easily do so at TomWoodsRadio.com, where we have links to iTunes and Stitcher. The show, of course, is free, and subscribing is free, and that ebook will be free, so make sure and subscribe. All right, let's talk to Judge Andrew Napolitano right now. I'm going to be asking him your questions, the questions you guys submitted over on the Thomas E. Woods Facebook page. You all know the judge. He is the senior judicial analyst at Fox News. He's the author of numerous books, most recently Theodore and Woodrow, How Two American Presidents Destroyed Constitutional Freedom. Judge Napolitano, thanks so much for being here on our 100th program.
Well, I'm thrilled to be with you. Whether it's 100 or 1,000 or one, you're doing the work of human freedom, and I'm happy to play a small part, Tom.
Well, thanks, Judge. I got so much excitement generated among my listeners when they heard you were going to be, because I've been playing with them. There's a mystery guest coming up for the 100th episode. That was mainly because I hadn't known if I could book you or not, so you were the mystery guest. Now you're
all
the
right.
Rock-solid guest. So they
the mystery is revealed.
That's right. So they submitted some interesting questions that I just want to throw at you and get your thoughts, okay?
Sure.
All right. First of all, I want to start off and ask you, what would be the kind of advice you would give to a good guy who's in law school today, you know, somebody who more or less holds our views? Do you have any advice for navigating through law school these days?
Well, I certainly have a lot of experience there, having taught at a number of law schools. The most recent and the one at which I teach now is Brooklyn Law School in Brooklyn, New York. The first thing you ought to think about is how serious you want to be a lawyer. The profession is not what it was when I went to law school. The opportunities are no longer there. Most law firms, traditional law firms, are shrinking rather than growing. If you've decided that this is what you really want to do, whether because you want to practice or you like the academic discipline of law school for whatever future purpose, the first year of law school is brutal, intentionally so, and you need to study 6 days a week. You maybe can afford to take a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday evening off, but that would just be to give your brain a rest. You really need to work extremely hard. You need to master a new way of thinking. You need to master a whole new set of terminology, and if you can do that, you'll get a leg up on your classmates, or effectively your competitors, in the second and third year of law school. I've often suggested to the students that the purpose of law school is to teach them to think like lawyers, to teach them the basics, and to get them past the bar exam. It is not to teach them to be lawyers. One of the defects of law school, which is not a defect of medical school, is you learn how to practice law on the job. You learn how to think like a lawyer in law school. So don't expect to learn how to do a house closing or how to try a case, but you'll learn real estate law and you'll learn the courtroom procedures. You just won't have an opportunity to apply them.
What about a field like constitutional law, where you're likely to encounter some ideas that, you know, run contrary to the ideas that you yourself may hold? I know a lot of students who have a sort of liberty background might be inclined to challenge their professors and so on, but I wonder if there's much point in doing that when what the professor's trying to do is just show you these are the arguments that are current these days in the legal world, and if you want to win a case, you better be familiar with them.
Well, you know, the professors obviously can't change constitutional law. Their job is to, again, teach you what the law is, teach you what the trends are, familiarize you with the various theories of how the Constitution can be approached, and familiarize you with the dissents. But a professor can no more change the law than a doctor could change biology. So sometimes it's helpful to challenge the professors and challenge the law, because it's a good exercise in thinking, but your challenge is not going to get you a good grade, and it's not going to get you past the bar exam, because you have to demonstrate a knowledge of what the law is, not what you want the law to be. In constitutional law in particular, has taken an unfortunate turn since the FDR era, with a couple of minor corrections, but for the most part, the vector of its travel has been consistently in the direction of big government and using the Constitution as a guideline rather than as the supreme law of the land. So you can certainly understand that and comment on it, but you can't deny that the law is what it is, or you won't pass the exam.
Judge, I know you've commented on the NSA lawsuit, and I have a question from a listener about that. I mean, do you think there's any potential here, or is this just a bit of political theater?
No, I think there is potential here. When the government boasts that the NSA massive spying program has been found constitutional by 15 judges, 14 of those judges sit in secret and had nobody arguing in front of them that it was unconstitutional. Those would be the FISA court judges. Only one judge has found this constitutional, who actually heard a case and had the government seriously being challenged. So Senator Paul and his fellow plaintiffs have every right to do what they're doing and every reason to believe that they can be successful. It's a very, very interesting technique. You know, it's a class action, not always something that people who believe in small government like, but it enables a small group of people, Senator Paul and a half dozen named plaintiffs, to sue in behalf of everyone who has been injured by the NSA. Now, that everyone would be almost everyone in the United States.
Yeah.
It's certainly everyone with a cell phone or a landline or a bank account or a utility bill or a credit card or a computer. So it'll be very interesting to see what the courts do with it. It may be that this is nothing more, Tom, than an effort to get this to the Supreme Court. And the more lower court rulings there are, and the more lack of consistency there is among the lower court rulings, the more the greater the likelihood that the Supreme Court will have to hear this and rule on it. The government does not want this to go to the Supreme Court. The prevailing view amongst those of us who watch these things for a living is, if the NSA program, as we understand it, gets to the court, it will be found unconstitutional.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, I was thinking this will test the theory that we have to vote Republican so that we get good Supreme Court justices. I would think that the NSA has got to be the litmus test as to whether that strategy has worked.
Well, one of the justices who has already spoken out very aggressively about this and has indicated a willingness to put the NSA in its place is Justice Sotomayor, appointed by President Obama. And one of the justices who's spoken out vociferously in the other direction, now they don't speak out in great specifics because they don't want to be the object of a motion to remove them from the case on the grounds that they've made up their minds already.
Right.
But in terms of the things they say about the Fourth Amendment, my good buddy Justice Scalia has opined that we might all be safer because of the NSA. So you can't always go by the pigeonhole in which we put the justice or the political party of the president who appoints the justice when you're talking about civil liberties.
Now, that's true, especially with civil liberties. A lot of times Republican appointees seem to favor a strong executive and to give the executive a free hand in a variety of areas.
Yes, it's regrettable, but that is the case.
I have a listener whose birthday it is today, and he said that a great birthday gift would be if I could ask you his question, which is, suppose you had the power to introduce one amendment to the U.S. Constitution. What would that amendment be?
It would be very difficult for me to introduce just one. I have often said that if I could tinker with the Constitution, I would do the following. I would change the third word from "we the people" to "we the states." I would add a modifier to commerce among the states by describing it as the movement of goods between merchants as they cross interstate borders, something like that.
Good.
I would add the word expressly into the 10th Amendment.
Yeah.
And I would repeal the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment. So that's the popular election of senators and the income tax. So I don't know that you could do all that in one amendment. You probably couldn't. But those are the five areas where the government has hung its hat in the march towards big government. Although the first is really just symbolic. There are many Supreme Court cases that stand for the proposition that the preamble means nothing. It's just a recitation of words. But that is such a historical anachronism and is such a profound inaccuracy to suggest that the Constitution was enacted by the people. It was not. It was enacted by the states. It was only written to enable the federal government to do certain things between and among the states, not to have any interaction with private persons whatsoever.
Now, Judge, you've been a guest on the Peter Schiff Show when I've guest hosted, and I've been able to ask you a lot of my own questions. I'm keeping myself to the questions that people have suggested, and I know that you and I have talked about this before, but inevitably when I mention your name, people are curious about what you think about jury nullification and if and how it can be used in the present day.
Well, there's many published opinions affirming jury nullification. I shouldn't say many. I know about a half dozen. I'm a strong believer in it. There are some states, New Hampshire, for example, that expressly permits it. In fact, in New Hampshire, the defendant is entitled to an instruction to the jury from the court. You may nullify if you want. Meaning, if you think that the government has applied the wrong law, or if you think the defendant did what the government says he did, but it shouldn't be illegal, you can find him not guilty. And there are other states where state court opinions prohibit jury nullification. But to me, jury nullification is one of the last peaceful barriers we have from the tyranny of the executive branch, and I wholeheartedly endorse it.
So you think it's a situation where if you're in New Hampshire, you can openly use it, but in other states, because there's no
well, open you need to know the you need to know the law that of the state that you're in. I only know about New Hampshire because it is well known that New Hampshire permits this in the Constitution. In some states, there are opinions of the Supreme Court of the state prohibiting it. In some states, there are no opinions. It's really going to be up to the trial judge. In some states, the opinions are equivocal. They, you know, you really have to finesse how you're going to apply them. But most trial judges, unless they are serious small government people or libertarians, are against this because they view it as taking the role of the judge way and putting it into the hands of lay people. I, having been a trial judge, I can understand that. But my sense of values are more towards the history of individuals standing up to big government, and the jury is one of the last peaceful ways to do that.
Now let's flip this on its head and ask, what about, this is another question somebody had, what about you as a judge, in your career as a judge, when you're dealing with a case in which the law that's at stake is one that you don't agree with or you think is wrong on one level or another, how have you handled that as a judge? Do you have to just leave that outside the courtroom?
Sometimes you do. It depends on how how much of your system is aggravated by it, you can simply recuse yourself. The decision to recuse, that is, to remove yourself from the case, is not appealable. The decision not to recuse is appealable, but the decision to recuse is not appealable. And not only is it not appealable, but you don't have to give a reason. So in New Jersey, I regularly recused myself from cases involving abortions because I just simply could not bear to sign an order authorizing an abortion, nor could I sign an order stopping it, knowing it was going to be reversed immediately, and I was just wasting everyone's time and effort and money, so I simply recused myself from it. Sometimes you hold your nose and do the right thing according to your oath, which is to uphold the law as it is, not as you want it to be. So you have that recusal stopgap. Occasionally, you can take a case where you disagree with the law and invalidate the law and just sort of roll the dice with the appellate court and see if they agree with you. But not every case presents the appropriate vehicle with which to invalidate the law. And if you invalidate the law knowing you're going to be reversed, again, you've just wasted everybody's time and money.
All right, Judge, here comes the fun one, okay? This is the most commonly asked question after how did he get to be so awesome, after we want him to have another show, will he run for president? Let's put those aside because I know you're not really interested in those questions, but I want to ask, people want to know where you stand on the idea of Rothbardian anarchism, and could you imagine a situation in which the law is not monopolized by the state, et cetera, et cetera? Where do you stand on the libertarian spectrum, in other words? People just want to know, and I'm just conveying that.
Even when Lou Rockwell and you and I are dining together, I am the most libertarian person in the room.
Okay.
That's the short answer to that question. The long answer is that I am the quintessential Rothbardian. I believe that you have the right to avoid the state, to avoid the government, the absolute moral right to do so. And I believe that the natural laws and the natural rights of individuals enforced by the natural law is a natural stopgap to everything the government wants to do. Now, this doesn't always work out practically, and this can't be changed tomorrow, and insisting on this may land you in jail or in the poorhouse, but my beliefs are steadfast that we'd have a fairer, more just, more prosperous, happier society if those values were part of society's as well as mine.
Judge, before I let you run, I got just one more quickie. I mean, this could be a whole show, but one more quickie. Somebody wants to know, you're a Catholic. Do you feel like there's any kind of contradiction or anything that needs to be reconciled between Catholicism and your libertarian views?
No, nothing whatsoever. I mean, the social teachings of Holy Mother Church are an imperative on private individual action, not on government action. If the government enacts a statute claiming that suddenly it owns 39% of my income, to me is theft, and it gives some of that money away to poor people, well, that's no credit to me. I only paid it because they came after me with a gun or threatened to come after me with a gun if I didn't pay it. But if I personally give that money to poor people, I'm building up treasure in heaven. If the church were to suggest that the government has the right to take this money from me against my will and give it away against my will, the church would be venturing into an area beyond its competence. But it has never said that. I accept and agree with the social teachings of the popes because it is a moral imperative on individuals. As long as the church recognizes the separation of church and state, it is the individual choice to comply with church teaching or not. Now, the present Holy Father has given some indication that he might want some involvement with the government, but it's just been some disjointed statements of his. There's been no formal teaching on that, so as far as I know.
Right, right. Now, Judge, I waited so long to have you on the program because I know you're working on a new book, and I wanted to wait till we could promote that new book. Can you tell us anything about it?
Oh, sure. The working title is Suicide Pact, The Constitution and the Radical Expansion of Presidential Power After 9/11.
Oh, fantastic.
So basically, first part of the book is a review of presidential excess from George Washington to LBJ, actually. The second half of the book is a review of presidential excess under George Bush and Barack Obama. We basically took their executive orders, the ones we could lawfully get our hands on, and compared them to tradition, compared them to federal law, compared them to Supreme Court cases, and compared them to the wording of the Constitution, and found them grossly and seriously lacking. Here's the interesting thing. NYU Law School has gotten a hold of this and is going to publish it as a 120-page law review article in the spring of this year, and then my publisher, Thomas Nelson, which is now a division of HarperCollins, will publish it as a 350-page book either in the early summer or around Labor Day. Well, it's a bit of a magnum opus, Tom. It's 1,800 footnotes.
Oh,
so the Tom Woods of the world will love it. It's a treasure trove. It's a treasure trove of research, and it's pretty rough guardian, if I say so myself.
Well, Judge, when it's ready, we will promote the heck out of that thing. I want to thank you for your time and your generosity and being such a good sport, taking these random questions that you had no idea what they were going
to
be.
Oh, I'm happy to do it.
My wife says hi. I had to point that out. She's hanging on in the throes of pregnancy, but she was thrilled to know that you were going to be
here. Your wife always seems to be in those throes, which again causes great joy in heaven.
Indeed, indeed. And on earth.
I love her as I love you. Thank you, Tom. All the best.
Thank you very much, Judge. All right, everybody, that's Judge Andrew Napolitano. His website is judgenap.com. Don't forget, as a listener of this program, you are entitled to a special discount at libertyclassroom.com, which is where you can learn the real history and economics that they probably didn't teach you in school, in courses you can listen to in your car. libertyclassroom.com with coupon code SHOW in all caps. And you are going to be seriously happy. You're going to be like a kid in a candy store when you see what we have in store for you guys over there. Finally, my upcoming speaking events, College of Southern Idaho, March 1st. Washburn University, Topeka, Kansas, March 5th. March 15th is the University of Central Arkansas. April 9th, Florida Southern College. And April 10th, Liberty University. Get the details on these events at my events page, which is TomWoods.com. That's my personal site, TomWoods.com/events. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.